just some hints and some tips, not deep theology, not big heavy stuff, because we're tired this evening. So just some easier stuff to remember to try and incorporate into your presentations when you speak, that will help people listen, because it's all about helping people to listen. That's why we do what we do. We want to help people to listen to the gospel, and the easier we make it for them, the more chance they're going to listen. There's never any guarantee, we know that, but if we try to break down as many barriers as we can, so that the way is clear for the gospel to come. The gospel is always going to be the barrier, we know, and that's right. But all the other barriers that we can try, we must try and break down. So there's just going to be like a list of different hints and tips. I don't know if you can understand the words hints and tips, they're quite unusual, yeah? Sorry, I shouldn't patronise you. My Norwegian is not as good as your English. Of course, it all starts with your own personal time with the Lord. That's obvious. It's not a guarantee or a rule, but it is an expectation. So like the book of Proverbs, they're not rules. They're expectations, aren't they? If you do this, you should expect this to happen. If you don't do this, you should expect that not to happen. They're not rules. Some of us get disappointed when we look at the Proverbs and we think, well, I did that. Why hasn't that happened? Because they're not rules. They're expectations. They're the normal way of life in God's universe. We know they're only expectations, not rules, because we've got Job. Because Job was a man who kept all those, and disaster happened. So we know that. So a good time, personal time with the Lord, quiet time, whatever you call it, walking with the Lord as much as you can expect that you will be more able to share easily the gospel. It's not a rule, but it's an expectation. The more time you spend speaking to him about them, the easier you'll find to speak to them about him. It's an equation that you could expect. I keep saying, I want to underline, it's obvious, it's not a guarantee. We don't buy ability to share the gospel by spending time with God. We spend time with God because it has value of itself, of course. But in his kindness to us, often, the more time we spend with him, the more easier or more able we feel to speak to them. So as we speak to him about them, we find it easier to speak to them about him. Just to break the rule, I remember, I don't want to exaggerate, like a good preacher often likes exaggeration, but I don't want to. Maybe my first 2 or 3 or 4 weeks as working with open air campaigners in London, I thought to myself, now look, the more spiritual I am, the more prayer time, the better the crowd, the better. So I did that. I thought, this is going to work. So I spent a long time, I'm making fun of myself, but I spent a long time in prayer and reading the Bible and obeying God and trusting. And the big meeting then in London was in Friday in Leicester Square. And I went there and I preached wonderfully. And maybe 2 pigeons and 1 dog and a piece of newspaper tumbled by. The next week, I thought, well, man, this is difficult. The next week, I had a real a sin fest. It wasn't a good week. I remember it. It wasn't a good week. I wasn't close to the Lord, and in fact, I was far from him. And you know what's going to happen. And sure enough, I go to the Leicester Square preaching, feeling like a hypocrite. And I had a wonderful, massive crowd. People were crying as I was preaching. There were people sitting on the pavement just... nothing to do with me, just in the kindness of God, saying to me, you see, it doesn't work that way necessarily. God can work how God wants to work. But you could expect the normal way is that the closer you are walking with the Lord, more obedient you're seeking to be, you can expect to be more used and useful outside. There are some other things. Your voice, when we speak out in the public arena, whether we're doing gospel magic or sketchboard or testimony or other things we might do, your voice is your most obvious weapon. Some people say, oh, I've got a quiet voice, or I've got a not very nice voice, or I don't like the way I speak, or I have some impediment that makes it difficult. All that stuff is part of you. It's your identity. God has called you as you are, and he can and will use that. People like to hear different things, don't they? They like to hear different accents. We even like the accent from the west of Norway. That's the best accent.
Yes.
That's the nicest accent. Yeah. And the southern is nice, but Oslo. I'm joking. But different accents, different way of speaking, different maybe difficulty in speaking. Just don't be hindered by these things. Don't be put off by these things. You know, your voice is unique. It's part of you. And it's a powerful thing. It's a God-given thing. It's one of the big things. I've not sort of read any theological books on the theology of the voice, the human voice, but it's one of the things that separates us from animals. It's a very powerful thing. There's chapters and chapters of the scripture written about the voice and the tongue and its power, both to bless and to curse and to worship God and to sin. And so there is something, I think, mystical, spiritual, I don't know, I don't want to put too much on it, about the voice. In England, and I don't know in Norway, but in England, every week, every day of the week, in the evening times, the most popular shows are called soap operas. Do you know what does that translate? No?
Yeah.
Okay. Soap operas. Yes. It doesn't translate in Denmark. Aha. And so they're all action. There's a disaster every 5 minutes. You know, a big disaster happened, then another disaster, then there's a... But the most popular and the ones that win the awards a lot of times are the episodes that often have just one person or sometimes two people in a room for an hour talking. Because when that happens, they have to be good actors, of course, but the drama happens in our minds and our heads and our imagination. There's no action, just two people talking, different passions and different ways they're talking, but it all happens in our heads. As we hear and as we listen. So it's just, I just want to emphasize the power of the voice that we have. It's a God-given gift and we can use it for him and we should use it for him. Of course, I'm going to turn over a page or two of my notes so I don't take too long. We read about the power of God's voice, of course, and Jesus is the word and the prophets and in Romans chapter 10, it speaks about how can the people ever believe unless they hear? How can they hear unless someone's sent? So there's a lot of power. But I want to get down to the little sort of hints and tips that will help you and just keep it a bit lighter this evening. So what's going to help people understand more? Well, someone speaking with the people rather than at the people is probably going to hold them more. If they feel like you're coming as someone who's got everything sorted in your life and you're very proud of that, and if only you were like me, listen to me, I'm important, that's not going to really hold the people or win the people. But speaking with them on the same level as a friend, as a fellow sinner, as someone who's found forgiveness, as a fellow human being, that's more chance of holding them. Someone looking at the people rather than looking over their heads or looking at your feet or looking at the board or the magic trick, or you know, we do have to look at things, of course we do, but someone looking at people in the eye, the chances are is going to hold them more than someone not looking at them. Someone who's not embarrassed in themselves or with what they're doing will help the people listening not to be embarrassed. I've got a very low threshold for embarrassment. If someone up the front is embarrassed, my toes curl and I get embarrassed and it's all very awkward. And well, the more that you can relax and be relaxed in yourself, the more you help the people to relax. Now, if you can pretend to be relaxed even though you're not, okay, that's acceptable. But the more relaxed you can be, the more genuine it will come across. Of course, it's hard to be relaxed in the work that we're doing. because the whole principle of evangelism in the way we choose to do it is that we go to where we feel uncomfortable so that the people can feel comfortable. I used to be the pastor of a church, and I was in charge of evangelism in a church when I wasn't the pastor, in different ways. And so I was very much, come to our church, do Alpha Course or Christianity Explored, come to our meetings. Wonderful. So I'm not speaking against that. But we were more comfortable when the people came, because we know the church. We know we've got to stand up, sit down. We know everything. We know where the toilets are. We know we can go. So we were more comfortable and they were a bit uncomfortable. So the principle of evangelism in the way we do it in the street is we go to where they're comfortable and in control. But it makes us feel maybe uncomfortable. Great example today. Some of us may have felt uncomfortable in that area. Uncomfortable with those people around. Uncomfortable with people sitting behind or sitting here or walking across or shouting once or twice. But that's okay to be uncomfortable. We're uncomfortable for Jesus. Because if the people are more comfortable, psychologically and actually feeling more in control, I can go anytime I want. So I'll stay and listen to this person. If I'm locked in a church, I can't go when I want. But if I'm in the street, I'm in control. I'll go. Well, I won't go yet. I'll carry on listening. I'm enjoying it. So it's a principle of the form of evangelism we do. Someone who believes what they're saying, that should communicate something. That should communicate passion, shouldn't it? You may stumble it and bumble it. The painting may be terrible. The trick may go wrong. What does it matter? Someone who really believes what they're saying is going to communicate an awful lot to the people. In fact, even more. If things go wrong, people can say, wow, man, that was terrible painting. That magic trick didn't work at all. I didn't really understand, but they really believed it, don't they? There must be something in this. These people are coming to stand like this in front of us. They must really believe what they're saying. So someone who believes, and we had a great example in our preachers and magicians today, really believed, and there was passion in the way they were speaking, and a connection, a real relaxed and easy connection with the people. Someone speaking to the people like as if they're a friend is going to hold the people, not an enemy, or not some distant people, or not the lost. Just a friend. Given a different set of circumstances, the people in the crowd could easily be your friend. If you happen to work where they work, or go to school where they go to, or live next to them, they could easily be your friend. They're just normal people. They're someone's mother, father, sister, brother. Could have been your mother, father, sister, brother in a different city right now. I've lost count of the times, and I'm sure you have, when people have said to me, oh, you speak like my mother. She's a bit disappointed. I don't really want to speak like an old woman, but you speak like my mother. She's one of you born again lot. You know, I come from a different part of England or a different part of Europe, but, oh yeah, my flatmate, he's like you lot. You know, you meet people. You can on the first day here, when we went out to wherever we went out to, I spoke to a German man and a young man, and he said he'd just broken up with his Christian girlfriend. Christian girlfriend. Because he said he couldn't keep her morals. He didn't want to keep her morals. He wanted to be honest with her. But it was a real wonderful conversation we had. And I said to him, you know, the chances are she's praying for you. And without sounding silly about myself, this meeting might be the answer to her prayers, that you've met some other Christians now, because he was watching what we were doing and he was impressed by what we did. So we meet people. They could be your friend easily. Someone who varies the pace and the pitch and the volume, you know, naturally, not sort of like trying to be an actor and sort of speaking just perfectly, but, you know, just naturally does those things, is going to more chance of holding the people. Nothing's guaranteed, but it's more chance. Someone, if humour is natural to you, someone who uses humour. Again, I can't understand all the language, but our preachers today, they used humour, didn't they? They asked people to come forward, not too far, go back, and things like that. It just breaks the ice. It relaxes the whole situation. Because it can be, well, it's certainly tense for us, and it can be tense for them. So someone who just breaks it just with a bit of humour, or a bit of humanity. If humour's not natural to you, don't do it, because it'll come strange. But just a bit of humanity, just saying, well, I used to be like this, or I did this, or I have a problem with this, or, you know, that will break things. And people will say, okay, I like me. I could be this person's friend. Someone who loves the people, without faking it or pretend, but someone who loves the people must hold them. And it's a prayer to pray. If you want to carry on doing evangelism, want to carry on, if the Lord has called you to be an evangelist, you really must love the lost. And you really must ask the Lord to burden you with the heart of the shepherd for the lost. Because Jesus, the great shepherd himself, looked upon the crowd and wept. Now, it's a difficult prayer to pray, because if the Lord graciously answers it, your heart might be certainly burdened, maybe broken, when you look on the lost. And in one sense, you want that. That will drive you on. Another sense, you don't want that, because you want to have an evening off watching the television or something, and you don't want that. But ask the Lord to give you his heart for the lost. You'll have to keep asking, but as you keep asking, and in his kindness, if he answers and keeps giving, it will affect you. Someone speaking the word of God should hold them, or should drive them away. Either way, the word of God is doing its sifting work. There are other forms of evangelism are available, but I'm speaking most especially about the sketchboard or the conjuring stuff that we do. As we preach the word of God, that has a sifting effect, in that as the sermon or as what you're saying gets stronger and more challenging, often people leave. We've seen that. And that's okay. Don't be swayed, like every one of us is, but don't be swayed by the size of the crowd. Don't think, man, look at me, look at this crowd, am I good, am I wonderful? That's a waste of time. Don't think, oh, this is a disaster, there's just two people and even the team have left. It's just these two strangers standing here. don't be swayed by that, because you don't know why people are leaving and you don't know why people are staying. You don't know what's happening. That's not your responsibility, and you can't know it anyway. So people who leave as you challenge more and more, maybe because they're convicted and they can't take that. Maybe because you're boring and you need to work better at not being boring. You know, you may as well be honest. Maybe because they can't read your terrible painting, well, work at your painting. Maybe because they've already met a Christian yesterday and the day before, and it's all too much for them, and they need time to think and process it. Like, I really had an experience like that. It may be all those things. But don't be swayed by the size of the crowd. Remain faithful to preaching the gospel. I like to use humour, and I remember clearly one time in my head, I had this art. It was like slow motion in my head and real time outside. There was a real great crowd. I was quite new to this. It's a great crowd. And I'm thinking, man, this is a great crowd. As soon as I mention Jesus, some of them are going to go, don't mention Jesus then. Oh, okay. No, but if I don't mention Jesus, what's the point? Oh, yeah, okay. Mention Jesus. No, don't. You know, it was crazy sort of in my head. It took half a second, but it was. So it was a great temptation. But what's the point? Three weeks ago, I was in a town in France that has a big festival around about this time of year. It's called Avignon, and the Avignon Festival is a big drama stuff. And I don't want to exaggerate by saying hundreds of thousands, certainly scores of thousands of people are on the streets all day, every day almost. And we were there, set up with our sketchboard and stuff, and here was another busker, here was an acting team, here was someone else, here was the length of the road, you know. Some have got big amplification, some are just quiet, the obligatory didgeridoo player. But and you could see these people got big crowds, and we get little crowds, and it can be discouraging. And you think, wow, why this small crowd for us? And we've got the spirit, and these big crowds here, Well, of course, when you realize what's happening is the people are being entertained. Soon as the people are challenged and the hat comes out and the man walks around for money, that's when the crowd disappear, because they're being challenged now. They're not just being entertained. So challenging people might make them disappear. That's okay. You don't know why they're disappearing, but we need to challenge the people, otherwise it's pointless, isn't it? I would strongly recommend you not to shout. Yeah, you seem to use a microphone, so you've no need to shout. If there's a time when you don't use microphone, I would strongly say don't shout, because your face becomes distorted, your veins will come up, your sound, your rasp. Yeah, unless you're a trained speaker, and I'm not, you'll wreck your voice after a while of shouting, and you'll spit, and you'll just look crazy. You won't look appealing. So don't shout. Don't worry if you've got a quiet voice. Again, with amplification, it doesn't matter. Without amplification, if there's times when you can't use amplification, doesn't worry. If you've got a quiet voice, the people will come and listen. If they don't want to listen, you shouting at them is not going to make them hear it. They'll hear it, but they won't listen, because they've chosen not to come and listen anyway. So it doesn't matter about the volume you use. Your body language is important. Try to be open. Again, in a sketchboard context, maybe a magician type context, you have to be quite open to use stuff. Sketchboard, I said it all the time, I'll say it again. You know, try not to talk to the board. Try not to be sort of curled up a bit and, oh, isn't this awkward? I'm sorry, I'm here. I'm wasting your time. I'm nearly finished. You know, try to physically make yourself turn and open so that these people are included. If you stand like this, these people just see your back and they'll think, oh, he's not talking to me. So try to include the people, the body language. Again, I noticed it today in all of the presenters, nice body language. They're just nice and relaxed, walking forward, walking back, stepping forward, making, it was just natural. So I'm telling most of you, probably all of you, just to do what you are rather than act and pretend to be what you're not. Take off dark glasses if it's possible. If you need them for prescription and all that stuff, that may be different, but it's wonderful to see people's eyes. And hats, caps are good to take off. Again, if the sun is burning you like it burns me, that's a bit more difficult, but try to. Hecklers. Hecklers, people who shout out from the crowd. The first person to speak back to the heckler is always the preacher or the presenter, because the relationship is between the man, woman who's shouting and the preacher, presenter. If someone shouts out, whatever they shout, if someone shouts and I'm in the crowd and I say, oh, excuse me, I know I'm the preacher's friend. The heckler doesn't know that. He thinks I'm just someone interfering. And he's going to, if he's drunk or whatever, or angry, he's going to say, well, who are you? You know. So the preacher is the first person to respond. And the best response is, of course, never to be offensive. Never to say, yeah, and you. Never to. Because soon as the heckler shouts, all the rest of the crowd are going to be thinking, okay, it's good. This Christian man, woman, preacher, let's see what they do with this drunk person, this homeless person, this woman who's shouting at this. Let's see. Let's watch now. So if you respond in a bad way, they're going to say, oh, okay. If you respond graciously, as you should anyway, they'll think, okay. And the best response is, oh, thank you. You know, or, thank you for your question. Or I hear what you're saying, but if I could just finish, we can talk after. That's the best response. And if they're happy with that, it's a genuine question, then they're happy to wait for you to answer their question. If they just want to disrupt things, that's when a team member can say, oh, hello, excuse me, I'm with him. You want to speak with me for just a few minutes? And the way I do it, I do a little body language. I say, you want to speak with me? And I start walking. So they have to walk. If they want to carry on the conversation, they have to walk with me. So as the team has to be aware of those things. Okay. As a team now, so that was just all for the preachers and presenters, which hopefully most of us are going to be through the week, because it's a great opportunity on a mission like this to do that for your first time, or if you don't have the opportunity in your church, wherever you're from, with a team that's on your side, it's a great opportunity. So try to give it a go. But as team members then, how can we best be good team members? Well, teamwork's just as important. Always, obviously, it's going to sound a bit patronising, like an old man telling young team, do this. It's not meant to sound like that, but always be ready to help and serve. You know, be on task, be engaged right from the start. Don't have downtime. Downtime's when we're sitting here drinking tea and stuff. Other than that, it's work time. And work time starts from when we say, okay, we're off. Work time starts along the street. It starts when we're setting up. It carries on while we're doing stuff all the way back here and a lunch or meal time. Then it's downtime. But it's all work time otherwise. So be engaged, be on task, be active all of the time. Look for opportunities to help, although be careful, because sometimes when it comes to equipment, the people whose equipment it is like to set up their own equipment, not because they're selfish, but because they've had it when people have gone, I'll do it for you. Oh, it's broken. What do I do now? You know, oh, it's stuck. I can't hang on, you know. So don't be offended when anyone setting up equipment says, oh, no, it's okay, I'll do that part, you know. But be ready and take opportunities to help. Be active when the presentation, when the preacher's finished or the magician has finished, be active so that as people walk by and look at the board, you say, ah, oh, you missed it. What he said was, you have an opportunity there. Ah, oh, you missed it. You just missed it. What she did with those ribbons and stuff was, she did this, then she did that, and it's, you can just rehearse the same thing with the people. So it's about being active. It's not just about being rent a crowd for the preacher. It's about evangelizing. Don't get lost on the way going to the site. Don't go shopping. Don't disappear during. Of course, if you need to go to the toilet, tell someone. Otherwise, if we have to move for some reason and we say, well, where's John? Where's Fred? Where's Anne? It's not that you're asking permission. We're all adults. But you just say, I'm just going to the toilet. So we know if we suddenly, I don't know how it works in Norway, but sometimes the police move us on in England. The police come along and say, you can't tell, we've just got to wait for Anne. Anne, we don't care who Anne is. So we know where she is. So don't disappear without telling someone where you've been. Don't get lost on the way back. And this is going to touch on some of us, but it's important. Try to avoid talking to each other for too long. Now, if we were a smaller team and going out every week, I would say don't talk to each other at all. We all want to talk to each other because it's relaxing. It's nice. It's a nervy thing standing there doing this stuff. And so it's nice to talk to each other. But I've noticed it in teams that I've been part of and run and so on. And I've noticed in others that when they do things a lot of time, they end up almost, it's almost like a club for them. They go to do the evangelism, spend time talking to each other. The preacher's preaching, they're just talking. Then they stop and they do the preaching just through their mouth, but with no thinking about it. And they come back and carry on talking because they haven't seen each other for a week. So it's nice to be friends. I'm being careful in what I'm saying. I'm not saying don't talk to each other because we're in a big group. We can afford that. You know, you two, three can talk to each other about different things while the rest of us get on with the work. That's okay in a big group like this. We can all talk to each other for shorter times because, again, it relaxes us. If you're nervous about this and we're out there for 3 hours, you know, after half an hour of talking with someone really difficult, it's good to talk with another Christian and say, could you pray for me? Because that was a difficult conversation, or that was challenging, or that was, I feel really upset. Or that's a different thing. Certainly talk to each other for that. But try to avoid talking about the football or Hartwick or things like that. Because we're on task. We're at work. So the work is talking to unbelievers. Let me say again, it might be that you need to talk to a fellow Christian at that moment. And that's okay. None of us are going to judge you if you do that. Okay? None of us are going to tomorrow say, look at them two talking to you. We're not going to do that because we don't know what the conversation is about. But as the adults we are, I'm saying try to avoid talking to each other. Okay. Remember, the people don't know we're a group. So we don't greet them like church. So if we see a stranger come to the sketch, we're they're going to think, what's going on there? We're just all different strangers to them. So don't greet them like church. Don't feel like you're being rude if you don't greet them. Something that's very important is be ready, as soon as the presentation finishes, to turn to the person next to you, the stranger, and say, excuse me, I'm with them, I'm with him, I'm with her, whatever natural to you. What did you think of that? That's a good two-point sort of phrase. I'm with them identifies you as a Christian straight away, not as a stranger speaking to a stranger. The person just preached the gospel, so it's clear who you are. I'm with them. What did you think of that? It's a nice open question. Now, again, that's the way I would say it. You can, if you include those two elements, you say it in your natural sort of way of speaking. And then the conversation starts. And here's another big thing. Now, again, I think it's fair to say, when the conversation is happening, that conversation is happening between those two people, we'll say, if there's three or four, okay, but two people. Don't go and become part of that conversation unless you're invited to by the Christian. That's important because that conversation is happening. Something is happening. I don't want to be too silly about it, but something mystical, and maybe not spiritual, but something's happening because there's a relationship formed. And all of a sudden, everyone else is an outsider. So this third person, who I know is one of our team, she knows she's one of our team, this person thinks they're a nutter. They're crazy. Why have they come up to us? Who are they? So don't butt in unless you're invited to by another Christian or by the Christian in it. Equally, if you're not talking to anyone and you can see one of the team members and someone else speaking, just stand not too near, but be available to the Christian if you're not talking to anyone, especially if it's a cross-gender thing. So if it's a female team member talking to a man or a man team member talking to a woman, and you're the same gender as the stranger, it might be helpful for you to stand not too near so you don't disturb the conversation, but just in the eye line of the Christian, just stand there. And they can say, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, Anne, come on, this is my friend Anne, yeah. And you can introduce. But don't do it without the permission of the Christian because you might disturb the conversation. I'm going to stop now by saying don't make promises that for other people that they can't keep. Oh, yeah, Hartvik. Yeah, he lives sort of near here. Yeah, he'll pick you up for church on the Sunday. Oh, yeah, he will, yeah. Oh, no, his wife will look after your children. Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, give me your address. Here's his number. Give me your address. Yeah, no, don't worry. No, it's all sorted. I've seen it done. I've seen it done, so don't do that. Use wisdom at the length of the conversation. I'm sorry.
Yeah, question or comment. Very often, one Christian might end up talking to, say, two or three strangers, and then more often it would feel natural to kind of get closer and see if you're kind of invited into the conversation.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So one-to-one is obvious. One to two or three or four, it depends. If the two or three or four strangers are in a semicircle around the one and it all looks like it is one, that's okay. But if sometimes two or three are not that interested and they're sort of just a bit more distant and waiting for their friend, then certainly you can engage without permission. Permission's not a good word because... Yeah. But, you know, certainly engage. But even if there are two or three speaking to the one, it may be that that's a good conversation. And all of us be aware, because some of us are good at getting into conversations and some of us may be not so good. So it's a good opportunity to help others to say, Anne, come meet. This is my friend Anne. She might find it difficult to get in a conversation, but when she gets into it, she's great. So you've helped her get, or him or whatever. So, okay, I said I'd stop. We're going to stop. It's just one last thing. Use Hartwick as your escape route. So sometimes conversations go round and round and round. Sometimes men like speaking to younger women in the team, older men, they think, oh, okay, hello, you know. They haven't got the right idea. They're not thinking about the Lord. They're thinking about there's an opportunity to talk to someone different, an opportunity to talk to someone of the opposite sex. They may be just, you know, it may not be a good conversation and you as the Christian may not be enjoying it. And that's okay. Your comfort and your safety is more important on these things. So you need to say, if you're not comfortable or if you feel it's going a bit weird or you've said all you want to say and you can't think of anything else, simply say, thank you for this conversation. I've really enjoyed it. I've got to go now. I've got to go back to the leader of the team, and then thank them and walk back to Hartwick. Just to end a conversation, if you're not enjoying it or it's not going anywhere, or it's a balancing act, because on the street you can act like a pastor as well. You can listen to people that never get listened to, and that's a wonderful thing. You know, it's a real kindness that, you know, it's a kindness as believers that we do to people. We let them speak to us and listen and show them concern, but you have to judge what's best.